crosstalk with Chris there. I lost my headphones, and now I see him sitting over there in the chair. The chair's black. The headphones are black. That's my excuse, and I'm sticking to it. Anyway, good to have you with us on the Around the House program. Is 6 minutes after the hour, and we thank you for sharing this beautiful Rocky Mountain weekend with us by listening to the program, and we'd love it if you check in with us. It's easy to get a hold of us here on Around the House, 719-473-1240. I'm Ken Moon. We'll be here a couple hours in our 30th year now, talking about that special place that you and I call home. And if you want to check in with us, that's the phone number, 473-1240, or a live email at aroundthehouse.com. Our list today is This is a postcard I think I got down south someplace. And, thank you, Chris. That's nice. I appreciate that. Intrepid assistant here is getting my engineer, producer, technician, and jack of all everything. Thank you, Chris. Appreciate it. There's my headphones. Feel more comfortable with them on. Anyway, starting over again. This is a list on a postcard I got, I don't know, New Orleans or someplace down south like that. And it's kind of a cute list. I think you might enjoy this. This is called the Top 10 Things You'll Never Hear a Southern Boy Say. So that's the premise of this list. Number one, I'll take Shakespeare for 1,000, Ken. Now that we would accept Alex, of course. Ken is now the new host of Jeopardy. I'll take Shakespeare for 1,000. Number two, duct tape won't fix that. You'll never hear a Southern guy saying that. Number three, wrestling is fake. Yeah. Number four, do you think my gut is too big? You'll never hear a Southern boy saying that. Number five, who gives a damn who won the Civil War? This one, you ladies will like this one. You'll never hear a Southern boy say, too many deer heads detract from the decor. Number seven, the tires on that truck are too big. Number eight, my fiance, Bobby Joe, is registered at Tiffany's. You'll never hear a Southern boy say that. Number nine, these shorts ought to be a little longer, Betty Mae. You'll never hear a kid say that. Finally, number 10, you all. You'll never hear you all as a two-word phrase, right? It's all one word, one syllable, with a bunch of apostrophes in it. Anyway, I thought you might like that. There's a whole bunch of those. You know you're a redneck when, or a redneck if. There's a lot of those lists. I've got some of them at home. I have a whole pile. Doing this show now, going on 30 years, people have sent me, and it's so cool that many listeners have sent me these lists of these not just funny, ha-ha things, but you know, things, points to ponder, word games, a little Pardoskians, I'm pronouncing that wrong, play on words kind of things, what I mean to say, and just all those. And so I have a pile, and I was looking at the pile today. It has to be five reams of paper that's gone through the printer of hundreds and hundreds of things that people have sent me over the years. So anyway, thank you all. If you want to contribute anything, I save most things and use them here on the air. So what's going on in your life? I would love to have you check in with us. And if you want to check in and we'll kick things around, that would be great. Did you watch the coronation? I watched the highlights. Here we go. I was just looking up this word, paraprosdokian, a figure of speech which is a play on words and unexpected ending. Did you know that, Chris? I've heard the word and I had a hard time remembering. It's paraprosdokian. That's six syllables. Well, you know, after three or four syllables, I get lost in the fog, right? Anyway, yeah, I hope you watched the parts of the coronation. I know there's people make fun of them dressing up, it's a clown show, you know, and all that. But no, there's so much history. Most of this tradition and the parts of the ceremony, like the sacred oil and all that, goes back over 1,000 years. So it's a great tradition. And there's nothing wrong with carrying on traditions. And so the royal family is something that's a constant in our lives. I was a big admirer of Queen Elizabeth, and I am old enough that I got to see her coronation. Exactly 70 years ago this year, a little black and white TV. I don't know if it was live or if it was delayed. I just don't remember. I suppose it was live. Somehow there were no satellites in those days. Chris, I don't know how they would have fed it. You think it was live or delay? I don't know. I don't know, yeah.
I mean, obviously, because the Telstar satellite wasn't until late 50s, early 60s.
Yeah. So the satellite relay were not around. There were Atlantic cables. Would you look that up for me? Was the TV coverage of the Elizabeth's coronation, was that live TV? Because anyway, I remember seeing it. Black and white was all we had in those days, and it was still pretty amazing. I remember seeing Charles and Diana get that wedding ceremony. My wife and daughter thought that was just terrific and couldn't get enough of it. So anyway, part of our lives. And if you haven't seen the TV show The Crown on Netflix, it's well worth your time, especially the first two seasons with Claire Foy as the Queen Elizabeth. Let's see. So your watering is underway now. You fertilized by now your lawn. Mine's kind of getting nice and green. I may have to cut it this weekend. So the trees are turning a little late, but they are turning, and that's all good news. So summer is on the way as the days get nice and long and the temperatures get really mellow. And that's nice. This really is a wonderful time of year. Here's an email from Don, and this is interesting. We're getting to the end of winter, or winter's actually gone, but this is you're going to think this is a little late, but if you have heat cable on your house, we've talked before about heat cable as a way to get rid of ice dams. Well, Don's son lives in Woodland Park. His electric bill jumped this year by using the heat tape. Is there a better way to prevent ice buildup? And the answer is fairly simple here, and I'm sure if electric bill jumped, it's because of the heat cable, because this stuff goes on when it gets to 37 degrees or cooler. And so I think this heat cable is coming on, and, you know, higher elevation places like Woodland Park and Summit County and places like that stay pretty cold all winter long, day and night. Many days in Woodland Park don't get up to 37 degrees. So his system, Don, is running probably all the time, all winter long. So one idea, these cables, the heat cables, about 5 watts a running foot. So heat cables that you lay in your gutters or on the roof to prevent ice dams, 100-foot run, which you can buy on Amazon for, I don't know how they are, a couple $100 or something like that. There's a 500-watt light bulb burning, you know, 24/7 up in Woodland Park. So one way to overcome that is to have the circuit switchable. Maybe an electrician could come and have your son be able to turn his heat cable on and off. So he would only want to turn it off when the snow comes, because you don't get ice dams without snow. So all winter long, if it's a not a very snowy winter like we just went through, he could keep the heat cable off most of the time, but if the snow is in the forecast overnight, flip that switch on and get ahead of the snow. So that's one way to do that. So yeah, I understand how that can be in a colder part of the world like Woodland Park, that's at higher elevation. What's Woodland Park, about 8,000 feet or something like that? So it stays pretty cool all winter long. Another thing that discourages ice dam formation, we've talked about this before, is to have a well-ventilated attic. That's why in places like, Michigan, Wisconsin, Minnesota, where it's really cold and humid, you'll see a lot of attic vents, many more than we use here, typically ridge vents, which is a continuous vent in the attic, because a attic that's well-ventilated stays cold in the wintertime, because heat can even leak through the insulation. So without a lot of attic ventilation, the attic tends to warm up a little bit from the heat in the house, and a warm attic will accelerate ice dam formation. So the colder you keep your attic, the less ice dams you have. So there's another, if he doesn't have a lot of vents in his, done in his, your son's house, maybe he could add some more ventilation to keep that attic as cool as possible, because a cool attic is healthier for the house anyway. But as long as you have lots of insulation, 16, 17 inches of insulation, then he'll be fine. So that's kind of the story there. tell him to put in a kill switch for his heat cable, and his electric bill will go down in the wintertime. 719-473-1240. We'll take a quick break and be back with your phone calls and live email at aroundthehouse.com right after this. Want to talk to you about Click Heating and Air. Once again, it's time to get your AC checked for the coming summer season. They got a special deal. This is the best price I've heard of. For only $59, Click will come out and check your AC system if you mention this commercial. This is a good way to keep your system clean, which means its highest efficiency, and it'll save you money as you cool this summer because electricity is expensive. Let's face it. So call Click at 719-782-5425 and ask for the tune-up special. You mentioned Ken Moonan Around the House, 719-782-5425. And if you don't have Central Air, now's the time to get it done before they get really busy. Central Air adds real value in terms of real estate value, and you get your own indoor air environment this summer with your own Central Air system. Now's the perfect time, and if you combine it, if you have an old furnace, if you combine a new AC and furnace system all in one, you'll save about $2,000 at Click Heating and Air. Once again, AC tune-ups, $59. Click Heating and Air, 719-782-5425, 782-5425.
From your roof to your foundation and everywhere in between, Ken Moon has solutions around the house. Give him a call now at 719-473-1240. That's 719-473-1240.
It's 21 minutes after the hour, and my intrepid producer, Chris Moyer, has looked up that Queen Elizabeth coronation thing, and it turns out that the RAF got some Canberra, which is, I think, the B-57 is actually.
Yes.
RB-57, and flew the kinescope tapes over across the pond, as they say.
They were doing like a Pony Express relay system
then. Yeah.
To Canada. They were able to try and do it live through Europe with the new uplink system, which was essentially the beginning of Eurovision in...
Which is probably microwave, I suppose.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
How interesting. So I might have been watching it a day later, I guess.
Yeah, because the first time they tried to do some type of international link was the time of President Eisenhower's inauguration.
Oh, okay. Wasn't satellite, because that Telstar thing was
late
62, 63.
So, right, yeah.
Well, that's interesting. So we were watching.
But new relay links. They were just created new relay links across the region.
Microwave relay type things.
Yeah.
What's interesting, Chris, is that time, 70 years ago, the sense of immediacy wasn't part of our culture. We didn't need to see stuff instantaneously. And so I think if it was indeed a kinescope, and a kinescope is nothing but a film of a TV screen, basically, if it was the next day, we probably didn't care because we got to see it somehow. And now everything has to be right now, right? So anyway, let's see here. We got a call. Paul on line one. Thank you for checking in with us. Paul, what's going on with you today?
Yes, sir. I have popcorn on the ceiling. The house was built in the late 70s, early 80s.
Yeah.
And it's the original popcorn, and it's just really dirty. And just, I understand it's probably not in style now.
No,
and
no.
So I need someone to come and take a look at it, peel it off, and then probably paint the ceiling and the rest of the walls.
Now, let me tell you a couple. I'll give you some alternatives here, Paul. If your house was built in the late 70s, if it was, 78, 79, 80, it probably doesn't have asbestos in it, because by then, drywall products, the asbestos had been removed. So if it is indeed the late 70s, you're in luck that way. It's a little pricey. There's another alternative, and I'll run this by you, and you may not want to do this, but one of the ways to make it easier to live with your acoustic or popcorn ceiling is to paint it. Because if you paint it, it'll brighten it up and make it seem much more, it'll blend in more with the walls, if you get what I mean. You're not going to have that dust and pollution, that dingy, drab kind of yellowish-gray appearance on it. And it's much less expensive and much less disruptive to paint it with some semi-gloss or satin paint. And as I say, it'll blend in more. Is that something that appeals to you, or would you really just want to get rid of it?
Yeah, I'd like to get rid of it. My son thinks we can do it ourselves, but that's a lot of work. Yeah,
I don't think so. No, I've got it at home in my little, I don't have, it's not a Rolodex, but I've got a little file at home of people that work in this business. So if you'll send me an email, I don't have it here at the station with me. Maybe I can get you a name or two of somebody that does that. But no, you got to be set up to do that. The companies that do that, you know, will tent everything off for you. And they may want to do an asbestos test to cover their you-know-whats, Paul, which will add another $300 or $400 to the job. But if they do, they do. There's nothing you can do about it. And they're all set up for it. And they wet it down. They scrape it off. And, you know, they might, it might, depending on how good the drywallers were that drywalled your house, it may or may not require some retexturing. It probably will, because many times, I was building houses back in the day, and a lot of times the drywallers would skip one coat of taping because they knew that the thick acoustic was going to cover it. You see what I'm saying? So once you take that off, you might expose some seams that need to be refloated and resanded, and maybe even textured with a flat texture. You'll just have to. Those are the unknowns in this, so it might end up being more expensive than you think at first. Does that make any sense?
It does, you know, and if there's asbestos in there, you know, I don't really, I'm not going to mess with that.
No, you don't want to, because they'll call in the hazmat troops with the suits on, and the price will go into the thousands and thousands, so no, you don't want to do that. But do you remember exactly what year your house was built?
79.
I think you're fine. I think you're fine, yeah. The lead paint was gone in the early 70s, asbestos kind of starting in the mid-70s. So I think you're going to be fine from that. But again, they'll probably want to do the test anyway. But no, I would not try to do it. Now, the process, in theory, like most of these processes, is theoretically, it sounds fine. You wet it down and let it relax and then scrape it off and put it in plastic bags and pick it out of your nose and ears and eyes and it just becomes terribly messy. And it's hard to do it on a production basis, if you get what I mean. But these guys are all set up for it. So if you'll email me, email me, go to the aroundthehouse.com website. And there's an email link there, or a little icon, and I'll try to get some resources for you, okay?
Oh, yeah, it says contact Ken.
Yeah, there you go, sure. Yep. Just remind me of this conversation, and maybe we can, in a day or two, I can get you some more resources.
Oh, that would be awesome. Thank you, sir. I appreciate it.
You got it, Paul. Thanks for your call. I tried to give him all the combinations of things that could go wrong, and the things that might make it more expensive. I have acoustic in my house. House is built in 1973, so I'm reasonably sure I have asbestos, probably, but the house has been painted gosh knows how many times since then, so I'm just going to leave it alone. It's not dingy, thankfully. My house is, I don't do a lot of cooking because I just live by myself. I don't smoke, so the ceiling looks pretty good, but I understand what Paul is saying. They get a little grayish, drab, dusty looking, and they need to be brightened up. 719-473-1240 is our contact line. Nora sent me an email about pitted spots on the driveway. Can you suggest what can be done to repair them? Yeah, I don't think I have a lot of good news for you, Nora. This is what's known as spalling, S-P-A-L-L-I-N-G. It basically is the surface of the concrete breaking down, so it ends up looking like, cottage cheese kind of look to it, a little bumpy, because the thin layer of cement on top wears away or gets eaten away by, ice on it, and ice melts and thaws and refreezes and thaws again. And so the surface breaks down, leaving the aggregate exposed. Those are the rocks in the concrete. So spalling is ugly, and it's not really reversible. You can apply some concrete patching material over this. Companies like Quikrete, Quikrete, make a vinyl concrete patch You put on, you clean it really well. You put on kind of a binding chemical, and then trowel it on a quarter inch or less in thickness. The problem is, and it looks okay for a while, the problem is the tires from your car are the pounds per square inch are so heavy that this patch doesn't last very long. It breaks down. If Spalling on a patio or front walk or front stoop, it'll last longer because you're just, prancing around in your sneakers. But, well, a driveway is a special case because of that loading of the car tires. So there's not really a lot of things you can do. You can do this except replace the concrete. You can slow it down. And the reason that this happens more than any other reason is snow and ice, especially for north-facing driveways where we don't get a lot of winter sun, if any. We get that freeze-thaw thing. So if you wake up in the morning and you've had 2 or 3 inches of snow, before you drive your car out, scrape that off, because otherwise your car tires will scrunch it down and it'll turn to ice almost immediately. Well, within a day or so, it'll be ice, and then that ice stays there and you get that freeze-thaw thing again and it breaks down more of it. So by keeping the ice and snow well off the driveway and try to limit it as best you can, that's one way to prevent spalling. But once it's occurred, there's not a lot on a driveway you can do to reverse it. So,
Ken, I got to follow up on that.
Yeah, go ahead.
What if there's a situation where you have a spalling like on part of the sidewalk, part which actually goes to the city? You have to talk with the city regarding getting that repaired?
Well, I don't think so. You could patch that yourself. Yeah, you could try to pretty that up with a trowel and stuff. You're right. The sidewalk does belong to the city. But the ordinance says, and I'm sure this is true here, probably in most towns, you're required to maintain it, which means you have to shovel the snow within 24 hours. And I would assume maintenance means to... You could patch it if you want to. So I don't think you would have to ask permission. But again, unless you keep the ice and snow off, that and you can't. The problem is with this vinyl patch material that you get it in powder form, mix it with water, and trowel it on. It can't go on very thick because it doesn't cure well, quarter inch or less. So it's a real thin layer, and it just doesn't do that good a job. It's sort of medium term at best, okay? 719-473-1240. We'll be right back right here on Around the House. Stick around, give us a call, and we'll see you on the other side of this commercial break. Well, this time of year, you spend more time outside. How does the outside of your house look? Now, I know you probably worry, as I do, more about the inside. But if your house looks kind of dated and tired, it's time to call Dutch's Home Improvement. Maybe you've decided to stay put for now because of the crazy housing market and higher interest rates. You want to give your house a facelift? Dutch's is the company to call. Whether it's doors, windows, siding, they can give you a new look, a more modern, up-to-date look. Your neighbors will be very envious because Dutch's is the go-to company for this stuff, and they've been around over 30 years. If you have ugly old wood, steel, or aluminum windows, ugly old siding all broken down, call Dutch's at 719-392-1369. Give your house a well-needed facelift. As I say, they've been around over 30 years. Best installers in town. You've seen Dutch's around town because they're very well-known. DutchesHomeImprovement.com or 719-392-1369.
Need help with your next home project? Back to Around the House with Ken Moon. Give him a call now at 719-473-1240. That's 719-473-1240.
It's 23 minutes before the hour on the Around the House program. Don't forget the podcast. We have the podcast of all the shows going back until the first part of July. And Chris, within an hour or two after we go off the air, will have this program, so you can download those and take them with you if you'd like. Listen on your iPod or your phone, or however you listen to podcasting. We're glad we get a lot of use and a lot of hits on our podcast, right, Chris? And so we're
very much so
for that. Yeah. Let's see here. 473-1240, that's our contact line. Jerry says, when I turn on my hot water faucet, it runs at the right volume, then it decreases rapidly. What do you think's going on? I have a similar thing at my shower at home, Jerry, only instead of my volume decreasing, it gets less hot. So I turn it on, I get the temperature set, the hot I want, and jump in the shower, and it seems to get cooler, just a little cooler as in the first 30 seconds or so, so I have to readjust it. Same kind of thing. Traditionally, faucets, particularly this on the hot water side, you may have some parts that need to be replaced in your faucet. The little washers swell up, and maybe they're out of position, or maybe a screw's come loose, or something's broken in there. Maybe a misaligned rubber washer in there. So you can your faucet may be a single lever cartridge type. Otherwise, you may have to take it apart. And if you have an older Delta shower faucet, you can buy a little bag of parts and replace all the internal parts yourself. Not that difficult to do, but it needs to be rebuilt somehow, whether, as I say, new cartridge or new parts. But that's what's going on. The hot water causes things to swell, and so that little washer in there, if it's not lined up properly, if it's worn out really badly, will swell up as the hot water hits it and just change that volume. In my case, it changes the temperature a little bit. It's not something I can live with it, but that's what's going on. So a bag of parts or a new cartridge would be the thing to do there. Let's see. Let's get our buddy Steve is on the line. You're on the air with Ken Moon around the house. What's going on, buddy?
Good afternoon, Sir Ken. How are you?
Hi. What's going on?
On the previous caller on Spalling.
Yeah.
Been my experience that it is more the result of not shoveling and throwing the old rock salt on there than it is anything else. Because that stuff is really destructive compared to the new mag chloride.
Yeah, on an older house, it might be that because, we don't use rock salt anymore. But
it's been done.
Yeah, oh,
it's
I know,
been done
I know.
The last 30 years.
Yeah.
Then
yeah.
On, I don't know about you.
You'll see, if you drive down a street, like an east-west street, you'll always see the north-facing driveways having this problem more than the south-facing.
Sure.
So it's more of an ice and snow thing. But, yeah, rock salt is, I don't know, how long has it been gone now? It's been a while, but anyway.
Not long enough.
Well, yeah.
Anyway, I don't know about you, but last week when people started opening up their property tax statements, my phone email blew up because most people are looking at 35 to 40% valuation increase.
Uh-huh.
Now, since you keep up with this, my understanding on Tabor, the 30th year this year, is the tax is only supposed to increase between a combination of the CPI and the increase in population. And what they're supposed to do, if that valuation, which it has in the last 2 years, gone nuts, they're supposed to roll back the mill levy to bring the taxes back down to that figure. Is that your understanding?
I don't think so. I don't think it applies to property taxes, Steve. Now, I'm flying blind here because I remember reading a piece this week in the Gazette about what we're talking about the mill levies. The appraised value skyrocketing. And I think there's some kind of an exemption for Tabor as it applies to property taxes. But I'm going to have to go find that piece again.
I will research that also. But people need to understand, not enough people do, everybody should be protesting every year their taxes. And we have a goofy system here, which I look back 2.5 years. And on the website, the assessor, it does have a useful function on your property. You can click on it, and it'll show you the comparable sold. However, this is the only time in real estate you will ever want to look for the lowest solds. And, in fact, that's what you need to do. Because otherwise, when you're looking to sell, you obviously want to have the highest.
You know, here's the thing, which is the ironic part of this. They require 2 years, every 2 years they look at these appraised values, and they happen to catch the highest 2 years in recent history,
right?
21 and 22. Which a year ago today, property values were a lot higher than not a lot, but somewhat higher than they are right now. So they caught us at the high point, right? So now there's a bill. I talked about this last week. There's a bill now that I think, did Polis sign it this week about ameliorating this by doing some kind of a rebate or something? But it's our own money.
Yeah.
The Gazette described it as, you take a guy, you pickpocket a guy's wallet, you walk around in front of him and hand him his money back. You're getting your own money in that case. So
he has been famously successful in convincing people that the problems he's caused, we like me and all, solve them. and this is one of them. And
then, this is the downside to this big, you know, this just huge increase in property values. My taxes are going to almost double. I don't know about you. Have you done your, at the bottom somewhere, there's a estimate of your new taxes. Do you see that?
Yes.
Yeah. How much does your tax bill go up?
85%.
85 increase? I don't mean the appraised value. I mean the tax bill.
Oh, yeah, the tax bill, right at about 85%. But anyway, people need to protest this thing every single year, and only about 4 or 5% people do. What they do in El Paso County, and I suspect it's the rest of the state too, they do a revaluation every odd year, which means 21 and 23. So, yes, we're getting caught there.
We are. But caught on the high side.
Correct.
Yeah. Yeah, Chris just sent me a piece from, was it from the Gazette, Chris? No, CPR News. Okay, well, that's fine.
Colorado Public Radio, yeah.
Colorado Public Radio, yeah. I'll read this during the next break.
Okay.
But, I don't think Tabor applies here like it does for sales taxes and that kind of thing, but I want to read this while we take a break here.
I thought it did because it's a huge chunk of your annual tax bill.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So if it doesn't, man, it should.
Well, Tabor, in its original form, required the vote of the people to increase taxes. Well, we're not, but we're not, I guess the powers that be in Denver could say we're not increasing taxes because we're increasing valuations. So, hell, okay, you know, so
well,
I don't know.
Still an increase in the tax.
What's that?
Still an increase in the tax.
Oh, your tax bill is going to go up, but the tax rate is not changing. So that you're going to get an argument there, I suppose. Anyway, yeah, I think there's going to be a lot of angry people when these tax bills start coming in, which is in January, I guess, your new tax bill.
Actually, they just went out last week.
Yeah.
They just went out last week.
Yeah.
And I've gotten a lot of phone calls on it. So anyway, appreciate your work.
Yeah, thank you very much, Steve. No, I think the taxes you're paying now were from the tax bill published in January. So the new one's going to be a lot higher. And let me look here. Well, I'll read this during the break, but this is a lot of the people I talk to are getting pretty upset about this, but it's one of those things that, again, the ironic part is that the appraisals caught us on the two highest years in a long, long time. 719-473-1240. We'll be right back right here on Around the House. Give us a call and live email at aroundthehouse.com.
Things break around the house. That's why there's the Around the House program with Ken Moon. Give him a call now at 719-473-1240. That's 719-473-1240.
It looks like this November we're going to be voting on a proposal which is making its way through the legislature now. I don't know how you folks in Wyoming are doing with your taxes. Probably got the same kind of problems. Anyway, here in Colorado, this measure, if passed, will limit the increases, knock them down 40 or 50%. The problem is it's going to do it with our own money. We're going to not get the refunds we were due from Tabor. So it's going to be taking money out of one of our pockets and sticking it in the other, which is a typical government maneuver because they can't get along with less money than they're getting now. There's just no way. It would be the end of the civilization as we know it if the government had to tighten its rein and tighten its budget and tighten its belt. That's what I was looking for. Anyway, so, yeah, we're getting flim-flammed one way or the other. There was a Gallagher Amendment that was repealed about 20 years ago, I think, that dealt with property tax increases modeled after Prop 79 in California, which was passed in 78. Back in the 70s, California house prices were going up so quickly that older folks on fixed incomes are getting priced out of their own houses. So that limited property tax increases, and it was very, very popular in Pat. That's been watered down since. And I think there was a Gallagher Amendment here that did the same thing, but it got repealed in 2020. So, who was it that said, Benjamin Franklin, the only thing that's certain is death and taxes, and this is just another example. They're going to get the money one way or the other. In this way, they're taking it from us and giving it back to us. Congratulations hold on to your wallet, right? What did Mark Twain say? No man's life, liberty, or property is safe when this legislature is in session. That was one of his, one of my favorite Mark Twain quotes. Let's see, it's 8 minutes before the hour. We'd love to hear from you. 719-473-1240 is the contact line. This is from Cheryl. I recently tore up the grass carpet covering the grass carpet covering my concrete porch. I guess she had AstroTurf on her front stoop. I can't get rid of the remaining black spots of backing and adhesive. I've tried mineral spirits and wire brushing with detergents. Any suggestions before painting the porch black? Don't paint your porch black, please, Cheryl. Try power washing. Power washing would be pretty effective for this. You got to be a little careful. If you get too carried away, you can blast away a little microscopic layer of your concrete surface on your stoop, which is what's holding the glue in the first place. Take it slow, because it's easy to go too deep with your power washer, but you can blast those off, and you'll be left with maybe kind of a funky-looking concrete surface that will be have color variations in it. There'll be some residual staining from the glue and so on, and maybe from the weathering of the carpet itself. So one of the things you can do is get a concrete stain. There's a lot of concrete stains available. These are acrylic products or water. They're water soluble, but they go on very easily, and you could get a gray one and blend all that stuff together with a gray, or you could, if you want to change color, you could get any color you wanted, you know, barn red or gray or green or just like whatever color you want. I'd go with the gray, but that'll blend everything together on your concrete stoop. But power washing is the way to go. You can rent a power washer down the street at the rental center if you would like. So anyway, that's kind of easy to do yourself. But be careful, as I say, because power, you know, you think concrete is tough, and it is, but power washer has thousands of pounds of pressure, so it can kind of blast away part of that surface. Charles says, we're replacing our older wood windows with vinyl. One of the dealers used spray foam around the opening. The other uses fiberglass. Do you have a preference? Well, I kind of like the foam. I mean, either one is going to give you a pretty insulating value to keep the drafts out and so on. But I like the foam because foam tends to ooze into all the little nooks and crannies and crevices around that window that you can't really see. I think it would be a better choice. And I do like the foam thing. It's analogous. Here's an analogy that I kind of like. Some people insulate their attic with bat insulation, which are the strips of insulation with paper on them. I like blown-in insulation for the same reason. The loose blown-in insulation gets to all the little nooks and crannies between the trusses and so on, hard-to-reach places. So, yeah, I would probably get the foam guy involved because I think that's going to give you a much tighter job. It'll be marginal. The differences will not be terribly obvious, but I just think it would be overall, if you want the ultimate weatherproofing, I think foam is probably the way to go. So what do you got here, Chris? A couple of minutes left, okay? Don't forget. Oh, by the way, I wanted to say, reach out to our folks, our friends in Casper listening on KTWO. And if you want to call in on the program, Casper is not running the show live. They're time shifting it. So you get it at 4 o'clock instead of the time for the live broadcast is 1 o'clock Mountain Time. So if you want to call in and contribute to the program, ask a question, make a comment, call in between 1 and 3 Mountain Time, even though you get the show a little later than that. This is an interesting one. May not be able to get to all of this before. Well, I'm not going to start this because it's a guy whose truck is too tall for his garage door. I want to talk about that's kind of an interesting email. But I've got a, and I won't do this now, but you may have heard this or you may not. We've been talking since December or January, whenever all this gas stove thing came up. This is the next step to helping with climate change and with air quality and things. All of these measures sound wonderful. They all end up costing us more money and taking away more of our freedoms. That's what they all have in common, without exception. And here's another one, the gas stove thing. And so gas stoves, New York is the first state to pass a ban on gas stoves. And I think ultimately this will mean gas furnaces are going to go bye-bye, gas dryers, probably gas fireplaces, although I haven't seen that yet. But New York's going to do this. And this is a great Wall Street Journal article. It was in the Wall Street Journal this morning. I want to discuss this a little bit. We'll do it in the next hour, because they're coming for your gas stove and they're coming for your furnace. So watch out, because not only is it going to cost you more when you go out and buy a new appliance, it's also going to cost you more in efficiency. Your power bills are going to go up, because heating, whether it's in a fireplace or a dryer or a stove or in a furnace, is more expensive with electric than gas by a whole bunch. And we'll talk about that in the next hour. 719-473-1240. And we have live email at aroundthehouse.com. And we'd love it if you check in with us here on the program. That's part one. Part two right after the news, right here on Around the House. After the hour, part two of Around the House. Good to have you with us here on this beautiful Rocky Mountain Saturday. Hope things are going well for you. Well, Mother's Day is a week from tomorrow. Chris, right? You two holidays in the year. You can forget every holiday and birthday and anniversary, and even, you know, if you want to forget about everything except Valentine's Day and Mother's Day are two holidays. Our must remember holidays, right? I hope your mom is still alive. If not, mine is passed. Rest in peace. But if you have a grandma or mom or aunt or somebody, just a mom in your life that you're not related to, they'd love a Mother's Day card. I know my daughters-in-law love that. Love me to reach out to them, and I'll do that. So Mother's Day a week from tomorrow. That's the day I always say. I've said now on the show going on 30 years. That's the day you could leave your sprinkler system on all the time if you want to guarantee his Mother's Day. Well, we're a little early here. Mine is on now. It's been on for a week or so. The overnight lows are only getting to the mid-40s or so, low 40s. So I think we're okay now. But you know how it goes around here. We could have a cold snap, without very much notice. 719-473-1240 is our contact line. This is from Ron. I bought a new house. My truck's a little too tall for the 7-foot garage door opening. What now? That's why a lot of times when I do a little home inspecting, as I've told you in the many times. That's why a lot of my buyers, when I meet them there for the home inspection, one of the first things they'll do is to drive an RV, you know, like a van kind of thing, or a SUV or a pickup truck in most cases, into the garage to make sure it does indeed fit. Not just height, but also depth in the garage. You know, does it stick out more than it should? Usually we're okay. But here's an example. I guess you bought a new pickup, as you say, and you say you bought a new house. I guess you didn't try to put your truck in the garage before you bought it. If it's... Ron, I hope if it's only an inch or two, you might be able to adjust the upper limit setting on the garage door to get a little extra room. Each garage door opener has an up limit, down limit adjustment on it, and it'll go up a little higher if you tweak. It depends. It could be a screw or a little rheostat or a dial or something. You might get your owner's manual. If you can't find it, you bought a house from somebody else, you can look up the model number of the garage door opener, go online and download the manual, and adjust the upper limit to a little higher. Sometimes you can pick up a couple inches. I hope that's all you need. Otherwise, you're going to have to go to the next higher door, which is a 7'6" opening. And this doesn't have to be a big deal, but it could be a big deal. In my house, it wouldn't be a huge deal because my garage, I have an L-shaped ranch home, so my garage sticks out on a wing on its own, so there's nothing above my garage. There's not a lot of rooms or extra load on my garage door, so I could probably, in my case, either the header. The header is the beam across the garage door opening that holds up the whatever's above it. And sometimes you can notch that header a few inches because there's not a big load there. You can replace it. You can rip it out and put some temporary supports in and then put a new header in a little up higher, you know, like 6 inches higher, that kind of thing. So I would consult with a garage door company, maybe an engineer or home inspector, and see what your options are if you can enlarge that opening or make it taller, actually, without having to spend a lot of extra money. You may have to call like a structural engineer to design. And another thing you might be able to do, and I'd consult with a garage door company on this, you might be able to replace a wood header with a steel header. Now, headers, you know, the height of a header depends on what it's made out of. So for a given load, a steel beam will be less tall than a wood beam. They'll just be taller, like your wood beam over your garage door might be a 2x12. Well, you might be able to find a steel header that would only, instead of being 12 inches tall, might be only 3 or 4 inches tall. You might be able to find what's known as a microlam. A microlam is simply a wood beam that's made out of multiple layers of wood, and it's much stronger than just a regular piece of, like, fir or hemlock. What a normal beam would, you know, they'd cut a 2x12 out of a tree, and that's your header. Well, microlams are made in a factory. They're actually glued together under high pressure. They're pressed together in a press and cooked and baked a little with hot glue. And we put these layers together, kind of like plywood. It's a laminate. So you look at the end of a microlam, and there's multiple layers of wood in there, but it's a lot stronger than regular wood. And you can get a microlam that's to carry the same load, that's not nearly as tall. It's just a regular piece of wood. So they're, what I'm getting at is there are options of what the header is made out of, and you can consult with a garage door company to see if maybe they could design a door or manufacture a door that's a little taller to accommodate your pickup truck. Now, whether or not this is going to be really expensive or not depends on so many variables and factors, like the load. Are there bedrooms above your garage or not? Is the roof pitched over the garage as a gable where there's not much load, or is the roof sit right on the garage door header? All of those have an impact here. So I just hope that you can resolve this easily. But start with that. I've gotten way in the weeds on this, and I didn't mean to. But you get an engineer to redesign your garage door opening if you really need to. But try getting an extra inch or two if that's all you need for your pickup truck by that upper limit, just adjusting that. So there you go. That's all you would need to know about a garage door not tall enough. I got to tell you a quick story. This is going back, 40-ish years, over 40 years, I guess. When I started building houses, I built under the VA-FHA property standards, which is pretty, you know, out here, particularly in Colorado, a lot of veterans buy houses. And if you build VA, you got to comply with their standards. In those days, the standards were fairly rigorous, and you built VA, and that was it. Well, the VA only allowed a certain pitch on a driveway. In other words, a driveway couldn't be too steep, okay? And so I put a bi-level home in with a two-car attached garage on it and didn't think much about it, and it was a hilly street, and what are you going to do? The lot sloped from the upward from the street, so you can see this coming. I put the house up there, got the house almost finished, and the VA people came along and said, the driveway's too steep. Yep, too steep to meet our standards, because, you know, it gets icy, and people slip when they walk down it, and the cars can't come up, and yeah, all that. So they wouldn't pass the house, and if I couldn't sell it VA, in those days, I just couldn't sell it. So what we did, Chris, was we dug the garage floor out. We kept the door where it was and dropped the garage floor, I don't know, maybe oh, maybe a foot or 2 feet, or it was quite a bit. And we busted up the concrete slab in the garage, dug the dirt out, and poured a less sloping driveway. It was terribly expensive. We had no choice. Otherwise, we couldn't have sold the house. And then when we put the house on the market, we advertised a camper special. In those days, everybody had a camper, and so you could bring your camper in this, because we had to do an extra tall garage door. That was what a struggle. That's the kind of tuition you pay when you're a new home builder. I never did that again, but I was a brand new at the game, and so we got out of it the only way we could, because it was sort of a death sentence. If you weren't able to sell your house under the VA loan program in those days, you were pretty much sunk, because we didn't have a lot of folks making big down payments in those days. And one advantage to the VA loan program is minimal, if nothing, down. And so that was something we felt we had to do. And I drive by that house once in a while and break out in a sweat when I do. But the driveway looks great now, and it's an extra tall garage door. You can't miss it. I won't tell you where it is, by the way. 719-473-1240. We'll take a quick break. Be back with your phone calls right after this, and live email at aroundthehouse.com. We'll be right back. Well, it's that time once again to get your AC checked for the upcoming summer season. This is you need to do this every year. Make sure your system is operating at its highest efficiency and to save you money. And Click Heating and Air has a special. When you mention this commercial that Ken Moon told you about this, it's priced unbelievably at only $59. So call Click as soon as you can at 719-782-5425 before they get really busy. I want you to get this done, because the warmer weather means they can do the testing they need to and get your system operating at its maximum efficiency. And if you don't have central air, get it done now at the beginning of this year before they get super busy as the days get warmer. Central air adds real value to your house. You don't spend another sweltering summer. Get to create your own indoor air environment. And if you have an old furnace, you want to get them done both at the same time, you can save up to $2,000 when you call Click Heating and Air. 719-782-5425. 782-5425.
Fix-It videos can be so confusing. Let Ken Moon walk you through it on Around the House. Give him a call now at 719-473-1240. That's 719-473-1240.
Welcome back to the program. It's 20 minutes after the hour. 719-473-1240 is that nice lady just said. What was her name again? Tell me your...
Laura.
Laura. I've never met her. That's why I'm not remembering her name, but she has a nice voice. And that was the reminder, 719-473-1240. You have live email at aroundthehouse.com. That's my site. You can also get the podcast at that site and listen live wherever you happen to be. If you're over in London watching the coronation festivities, you can listen to the Around the House program, which I've done, by the way, in 2011. I was over there, that's when the show was on at 9 o'clock in the morning. Well, it was 7 hours, 4 or 5 in the afternoon, and I was riding around in a tour bus going down to Canterbury, listening to myself, making sure the program was on. It was a best of program, listening to myself 6,000-7,000 miles away, whatever it is, 5,000, I guess, over in England. It was kind of cool to think about that kind of technology. So you can just listen live at aroundthehouse.com. There's also a button to click there to get a hold of me with email, and I'll see it right here in the studio. During the week, if you want to email me, we'll set up a little dialogue. Try to keep your questions fairly succinct and one subject at a time, and I'll be glad to respond. I'm pretty good about responding to those emails. Headline, Wall Street Journal, New York passes first in-nation ban on gas stoves in new homes and apartments. New York's set to become the first state to ban U.S. gas stoves in new homes and apartments. I just said that. That's why I said it, because it's the first line of the article. The Democratic-controlled legislature passed a bill late Tuesday that prohibits natural gas and other fossil fuel hookups in new residential buildings and some new commercial buildings for now. The measure aims to help the state meet targets for reducing greenhouse gas emissions. Oh, okay. It would prohibit other gas-powered appliances like, here we go, water heaters, furnaces, and clothes dryers in new residential buildings, in addition to banning gas stoves in new homes. that doesn't quite, I don't know why they cut it in half like that. Apparently, other gas-powered appliances, such as water heaters, furnaces, new residential buildings, I guess buildings means homes or offices or apartment buildings, I guess. But for now, gas stoves, you know, furnaces and dryers are coming down the pipe. Measure will go into effect in 2026 for buildings 7 stories or under, and later on for taller buildings. Let's see. It doesn't cover gas-powered appliances in existing homes. That was so nice of them. New commercial buildings must comply, including office buildings, but some were granted exceptions to the ban. These include commercial kitchens, crematoria, laboratories, and laundromats. So for now, restaurants will still be able to use gas stoves, which is a must. If all the chefs I've heard talk about this, you got to have gas cooking if you want to cook efficiently in a restaurant. This started with the CPSC, Consumer Product Safety Commission, because of indoor air health concerns with gas stoves, like asthma and allergies and kids getting sick and all that. It would never occur to these weenies that just if you don't want a gas stove, go buy an electric one and leave us alone. Have a nice day. The banning things, the word ban is a big deal to these people to cut greenhouse gas emissions. Of course, environmental groups, says the Wall Street Journal, cheered passage of the measure, but said the law didn't go far enough, of course, making it harder to hit greenhouse gas target benchmarks that China and India are giggling at us about our benchmarks. We're the only nation, really, I think, in the world that's been meeting our targets for the past 13, 14 years, that we're down, I don't know, 9 or 10%. Nobody else is down. So Republican leaders, of course, asked the governor to drop the gas stove ban from the budget, but were rebuffed. The energy plan that Albany leaders are proposing is far too intrusive, not to mention unaffordable, unsafe, and unrealistic, said Rob Ort, who's a Republican leader in the legislature. New Yorkers for Affordable Energy, a coalition of labor unions, business groups, and gas companies lobbied against the measure, has said burning natural gas would hurt homeowners by raising energy costs. And that's the point, isn't it? Cooking, drying clothes, and especially heating homes with electricity versus natural gas is 4 to 5 times more expensive. Dozens of municipalities in New York State have banned natural gas hookups for new construction projects. More than 20 states have laws that forbid cities from enacting their own bans. I'm not sure what states those are. We'll see how this goes. Of course, there have been legal challenges to this. The Berkeley had a ban in California that was struck down by a circuit court, and I don't know, that's going to probably go to the Supreme Court. These people, there's never enough for us in terms of limiting our options, our choices, less freedom, more expense. Any of these measures to cut greenhouse gas emissions have two things in common. They mean less freedoms for you and me and higher expenses, higher costs for you and me. That's what they all have in common. And there was a testimony the other day, and I don't know where to send you to read this, but Senator Kennedy from Louisiana, who's a piece of work, he's funny and incisive and a bright guy, had one of the deputy energy department secretaries on there, and this guy admitted that to meet our 2050 fossil-free carbon-neutral goals will require tens of trillions of dollars. And Senator Kennedy asked him one question. He said, okay, you want us to spend tens of trillions of dollars by 2050 to meet these goals. How much will that drop the average global temperature? And the guy couldn't answer the question because results don't matter. That's the point. It doesn't matter. Nobody ever says then what. They just want to limit us, limit our freedoms, limit our choices, and cost us more money. And that's what's going to happen. I just hope that this gets slowed down a little bit. But gas stoves, this is just the big toe in the swimming pool for now. Their goal is to ban natural gas furnaces, which would be a huge mistake. Electric furnaces are notoriously expensive, and capital costs aren't really super high. They're, you know, a little more expensive than gas furnaces, but the operating costs are way higher, especially in our climate where we have those long, cold winters. Heat pumps, which are a version of electric furnaces, that a heat pump is simply a reversible air conditioner. You reverse it in the summer. You can cool by extracting heat from the house and sending it outdoors. In the winter, you flip a switch, so to speak, and it extracts heat from the outdoor environment and sends it inside. The problem is, in a cold climate like ours, there isn't a lot of latent heat outdoors, and so that's why you don't see heat pumps. You see them more down south in middle Atlantic states and those kinds of things. But don't tell anybody else that. What we want to do is two things. We'll shut down your power plant. We want you to use electric furnaces and drive an electric car. Go figure. Scratch your head on that one. That's a Alice in Wonderland policies. Masquerading as something noble, right? Because the rest of the world doesn't really care. We solve tomorrow's problems with tomorrow's technology, and if the planet's temperature goes up a degree or degree and a half in the next 100 years, you go out and put another block on the retaining wall. If the ocean levels change a little bit, big deal. They give the game away, these folks. They don't like nuclear power, and if you want a carbon-free world, nuclear power is the way to go, but they don't want that either. So we're kind of stuck between these various rocks and hard places, and it's you can see it day by day incrementally. They're coming after our gas appliances. Go ahead.
It looks like there's 23 states that have enacted energy choice laws that prevent state and local governments from regulating energy sources from businesses and homes.
So, are we one of them? I doubt it.
No.
I would not think
so. It just says last month, Idaho, North Dakota, and South Dakota became the latest states to pass such national gas preemption laws, and Montana is poised to adopt similar legislation.
Natural gas is such a clean burning fuel. It's just it's so easy to get into your house. It's so quiet and unobtrusive and efficient from a BTU standpoint. You know, if you think about it, you send the natural gas to the power plant, which runs a turbine, which, you know, maybe heats water, makes steam, runs a turbine. You run the electricity through a transformer, through the wires, up and down and over across the neighborhood, through multiple transformers here and there and everywhere, down into your neighborhood, through another transformer into your house. So why not just put it in your furnace in the first place instead of sending it on a circuitous trip through the power plant to get? And that's why electric heating is so expensive. We live in a topsy-turvy world. Up is down, black is white, wet is dry, all that. So that's the world we are in, and it's really, it can be a little disconcerting. Is that the right word? So anyway, I keep talking about it here, and it's the only way I stay sane. At least I have a little bit of an outlet here, and I hope I didn't you know, I don't want to get too carried away here, but there's enough pushback that if these changes are going to occur, they're going to occur a lot more slowly because people are getting more and more aware and a little more and more upset. You want to take my gas car away? You want to take my gas furnace away? No, thank you. I'll pick some other way. So if you have some comments about that or concerns or want to check in with us or anything that's on your mind, give us a call, 719-473-1240. We have an email. I'll do this after the break. My butcher block starting to crack. What should I do? Should I patch it? It's an interesting question. I love butcher blocks. Maybe you have one in your house. We'll talk about butcher blocks and maintenance. And we're going to also talk about attic ventilation because this is the time of year if you want to crawl up in the attic and change your ventilation before it gets really hot. This is the time to do it. So we'll do that, all that business after we take a break. Right here on Around the House, 719-473-1240 and live email at aroundthehouse.com.
Got a fix-it problem at your house? Ken Moon is here to help. Give him a call now at 719-473-1240. That's 719-473-1240.
23 minutes before the hour on the Around the House program. Good to have you with us. 719-473-1240. Live email aroundthehouse.com. Let's see. Jim says, my butcher block's starting to crack. Should I patch it? And if so, with what? I wouldn't try to patch it. Whatever you patch it with won't be compatible with food preparation. The butcher block's trying to tell you something. It's drying out, which is typical in our climate, of course, because it's our low humidity here. So I would start seasoning it with mineral oil. You can get mineral oil at, you know, Walgreens or Safeway or any other, you know, the same kind of mineral oil that we don't do this anymore. Years ago, for I guess for constipation, kids would get mineral oil, right? I'm sure that was, we took it for our tummy. I remember, I'm here, open your mouth. My mother would give me some mineral oil. So it's compatible with food preparation. Make sure that that's the case, that it is edible, if you will. But yeah, mineral oil, or you could use, I suppose you can use canola or any kind of vegetable oil on your butcher block. It may help seal that crack a little bit. A butcher block's usually made with maple. It's a tight-grained wood. But when they crack, the problem is the cracks probably won't go back to its original tightness, of course. And that's a place for bacteria to get in. And you don't want bacteria to hide in those cracks. That's why it's probably not a good idea to cut up meat, especially chicken, on your butcher block. If you do, you're risking bacteria, you know, in hidden, as I say, hidden crevices and so on. So I'll leave that up to you. If it's nice and tight, I guess you know, if you want to cut up meat or chicken on it and you wash it right away with some sudsy water, you'll be okay. Generally, it's a good idea to use plastic cutting boards for meats and fish and chicken and things. My daughter got me onto these on Amazon. There are plastic cutting boards, but made of four to a package. I got four different colors from Amazon, red, yellow, blue, green. And they're very durable plastic. And I just whip them out and stick them on my counter, and that's my cutting board. I don't have to get a wood or a heavy plastic cutting board out. So I use them for onions and everything and whatever I'm chopping up. So those are really very handy. But generally for a butcher block, it's best for breads, pastries, vegetables, fruit, that kind of thing. So I'll leave that up to you. But just knowing that if you get a lot of cracking in a butcher block, it's a place for bacteria, for harboring bacteria. But yeah, like anything wood in our climate, it's good to season that once in a while with some kind of oil. Yeah, vegetable oil, anything that's edible. But anything you patch it with would not be edible, so I would not do that. So 719-473-1240. I want to talk about attic ventilation a little bit. This is the season to fiddle with it if you're going to fiddle, because if you had a hot summer last year, generally speaking, and I don't want to throw rocks at my at builders, because I used to be one, those companies are great, do a great job, especially in the regulatory environment we find ourselves in. Builders are beset from all sides with, people after them and criticizing them and so on. It's so funny, this anti-developer sentiment is, I guess, such a kick out of, because if that sentiment had been around when your house was built maybe 50 years ago, you wouldn't have a place to live either. I used to tell people, as long as they keep making babies, we keep building houses and apartments and keep developing land, because people have to have a place to live. So builders, you know, tend to be picked at, but they do a great job. But this one area, I'm going to be a little critical, and I understand why they do it. Houses are not as ventilated as well as they used to be, in my opinion. When I was building houses decades ago, we would put gable vents everywhere. The gable vents are in the sidewall of the attic, and you get a lot of cross ventilation, wind blowing in, even winter and summer, but you get a good attic ventilation. Now, instead of gable vents, we use mostly roof vents. These are those passive square roof vents. Some people call them turtle vents. It's reminding of a turtle shell kind of idea. And so you'll see most new homes have 7, 8, maybe 10 roof vents towards the top of the roof, usually on the backside, so they don't show from the street. And that's pretty much, and then there's soffit vents underneath behind the gutters. So theoretically, you get air, because air has to convect through the attic to get rid of the heat in the summertime. And so the problem, two problems. First of all, those soffit vents behind the gutters tend to plug up with insulation. Builders will put baffles, some cardboard or sheetrock or wooden or even plastic baffles, to try to keep the insulation out of the soffit vents, but they That restricts the airflow, and they get plugged up anyway. The roof vents are a particularly inefficient because they have a snow screen built in underneath the roof vent, which is you can barely see through. It's kind of a mesh underneath. I know why builders do that, to keep the snow from blowing into the attic, which is another whole hassle for builders. So between the baffled off and restricted soffit vents and the snow screened roof vents, you don't get a lot of air circulation in new homes. Now, most new homes these days, I can say most, are air conditioned. So a hot attic, you're not aware of it because the air conditioning masks the hot attic. It just runs up your cooling costs. So what I want to talk to you now about is increasing the attic ventilation at your house. A couple of ways to do that. The gable vents I talked about are the most efficient way to ventilate an attic. Because, as I say, it's a little windy here in the Rocky Mountains, so you get a lot of good cross breezes in the attic from one gable vent to another. Another way to do it is a roof vent. This is a continuous ridge vent. Some people call it a ridge vent. It's a slot we cut in the top of the roof that goes all the way along the top of the roof peak in a house, and that's a very efficient way because the most heat accumulates in the top of the attic anyway. So a ridge vent or roof vent. Now, the time to do that is when you put a new roof on. You can't really go back and put one in after the fact because it can leak and it's a hassle and very expensive to cut those shingles and all that. So the time to do it is, as I say, when you change the roof out. But you can add gable vents any old time you want. Just go to the end of the attic and you can do this from the outside. You can cut a hole in the outside of the house. That's easy for me to say. If you have a stucco house, that's a whole other problem, but you get the idea. Gable vents, if you want to cool your attic down and save on air conditioning costs, gable vents are the way to go. Do you have a question, Chris?
Well, I was just noticing, I mean, over the years, we used to have those ventilator turbines up there, but obviously it got to a point where during the winter, you have to go up there, get the two, tri-level house, when you're trying to get two levels of ladders up to try and get up to put the cover on the roof there on those turbines, it gets real dangerous.
You should
and stuff
do
like
that, yeah, because you don't want that sucking that heat out of the attic in the wintertime.
Oh yeah, that gets
I'm
real
glad
dangerous.
You mentioned that.
And, yeah.
You don't see them as much as you used to. They're kind of ugly, and so usually they go in the back of the house. But you could put a turbine vent right over the hole where you have an existing roof vent if you want, or put two or three in. There are solar powered attic vents that you again put up. You can take one of the fixed roof vents off and throw it away and use that same hole and put a solar-powered attic vent fan. It runs year-round because the sun spins the fan. Problem with those is you're sucking heat out in the wintertime, so those really should be shrouded. Yeah, if you have a spinning turbine vent on your house, you got to take a plastic black garbage bag up there and a bungee cord and shroud it in the wintertime. So that brings us back again to gable vents, which are the most efficient. But one of the things I've done in my house, and I started this 2 or 3 years ago to tell the audience about, is I put a thermometer up in my attic to see how hot it gets. I've got gable vents, I've got roof vents, I've got big soffit vents, bigger than normal, because that way I can vent my whole house attic fan out through those extra big soffit vents. And I keep track of the attic temperature in the summer, and in spite of all the ventilation I have, it can get to be 120, 100, even 130 up there on a sunny day because the sun is so high and stays up so long in the summertime. I think I saw one day 138.5 in my attic. So you can imagine how much heat load that puts on the shingles and on the house itself. You can get a little remote reading thermometer, put the transmitter up in the attic and the readout down below and keep track of that. But attics tend to get really hot in the summertime. They're going to get hot anyway, particularly if you have a dark roof, and particularly now that we sort of underventilate attics for other kinds of reasons. Now, in the winter, there's a corresponding benefit because that solar, the sun shining on a roof tends to increase the heat, kind of passive solar heat gain, and you want that in the wintertime because it'll leak into the house through the insulation even, and so it's nice to have a little extra heat in the attic in the wintertime, but in the summer, it's pretty hot. And that's why if you don't have air conditioning, why you can't sleep at night, because those hot attic temperatures are leaking into your bedrooms, even through the insulation. And this is another reason to get central air conditioning for my buddies over there at Click Heating. I give them a call because they got some special deals for you. Air conditioning really helps. And, of course, attic ventilation as much as anything else. Even you can also, one thing I'll wrap this up here, you can get attic fans that actually hang up on the side of the attic, temperature controlled, and they kick themselves on when the attic gets hot and actually mechanically suck air through the attic, and that really helps lower the temperature. 719-473-1240, time for a quick break. We'd love to hear from you today right here on Around the House. Well, you're spending more time out in your yard outside as the temperatures increase and the days get nicer. How's the outside of your house look? Does it get a little tired looking, a little dated? Maybe it's time to spiff it up a little bit. Give it a facelift by calling Dutch's Home Improvement. That's one way to make your house seem more modern. Maybe you want to stay put because of interest rate situations. Maybe one of the reasons you're thinking about moving is because your house isn't as pretty as it used to be. Well, if you've got ugly old wood, aluminum, or steel windows, you can make it more energy efficient with nice-looking vinyl windows from Dutch's Home Improvement. Time to replace that old dated siding and maybe that old front door of yours. They do, of course, entry doors, siding, windows at Dutch's. Been around over 30 years now, so give your house a well-needed facelift. It'll look great when Dutch's is done. So give them a call at 719-392-1369 or DutchesHomeImprovement.com.
From your faucet to your furnace and everywhere in between, Ken Moon has solutions around the house. Give him a call now at 719-473-1240. That's 719-473-1240.
It's 7 minutes before the hour. Don't forget the podcasts of the program are available. That's kind of a lazy way. You listeners, you friends, all my faithful listeners out there.
Friends of the family.
What's that?
Friends of the family.
There you go. Yeah, the Around the House family. Yeah, thank you for hitting on the podcast. We get real big numbers. I'm usually number one around the station, the show, on a month-by-month basis. We're 4 or 5 out of the top 10, thanks to you. And the podcasts are available at aroundthehouse.com. Listen to podcasts. Click on that or the KRDO.com/radio site. And the podcast for this show, no exception, Crystal's put it up online within an hour or two after we go off the air today. So you can grab that podcast and segment by segment. And the old podcasts of my Denver-based show are still, I looked online going back, 6 or 7 years. So those are available also. So anyway, aroundthehouse.com. Click on listen to podcasts. This is from Ken, guy named Ken. It's kind of nice to have a fellow spirit out there with the same, Ken, babies aren't named Ken much anymore. That's a name that's kind of gone bye-bye, right? We see Kyle and we see Caden, but Ken has gone away, hasn't it? So many of those names, although girl names, why am I off on this track? The old names like Emily and Sarah and Kate are coming back, and I like that. I love those old feminine type names from 100 years ago. But Ken, I don't know. People just don't name their babies that anymore. But here's a fellow Ken who has a question about his bi-level house, 1980s house. The return air is right outside the bedroom door, and it's very noisy. It's driving us nuts. Can it be moved? Well, in a word, no, not really. Return airs are pretty much have to be where they are. After the fact, it's hard to relocate them. You might be able to add one someplace else and partially close this down. One answer is to get some white noise to offset the noise from the return air. I do that at my house. I have a Honeywell HEPA air filter that I run all night long. It cleans the air in my room, which can't hurt, right? Especially this time of year with all the pollen around. So that would offset some of this noise. And I don't know much else to really do. You can ask your heating contractor. If it's a long kind of a horizontal return air, usually those are two parts. Like they put them between a wood stud. So there's like 16 inches on one side and 16 on the other side. Maybe if there's enough return air in other parts of the house, your heating contractor can block half of it off. That would cut the noise in half. The problem is with that, you know, there's always a yeah, but on these solutions, is that you might not have as good a heat circulation in your bedroom area of your bi-level. But I would not, don't start blocking off any grills or vents in your house until you talk to a heating contractor, because you don't want to load the furnace down without having enough airflow through it. So, yeah, there are other schemes. You can try to line the return air grill or the return air ducting system with some kind of noise deadening foam type stuff, but that sounds terribly complicated. The problem is, again, I want to get in the weeds here, but the return airs usually aren't a direct metal duct. They usually, we pull return air down through the stud bays between the drywall, and we run it around various parts of the house, not necessarily through like a metal duct you'd have for a heat vent. So it's very hard to modify them after the fact. So check with a heating contractor, get a white noise source in your bedroom. Maybe that will help. Reminds me of the old, the guy brings the old car into, and his car is rattling like crazy. And the guy says, I want you to fix this rattle in my car, but I just can't afford very much in terms of paying a fee. He said, well, just turn up the radio, right? Remember that?
It happens to be the muffler strap or something.
Oh, is that something? Yeah, something like that, man, rattling. Turn up the radio, and then it won't charge you anything, right? So, and there's another, years ago, popular mechanic cartoon, and it's in a repair, and the car is totally apart. You see the muffler, the wheels are off, the air cleaner and the doors are open. They've kind of taken the inside trim off the doors, and you see all the internal guts of the interior. The seats are out and everything. All things laying on the floor. And a guy comes in, and the mechanic says, we found the problem. There was a marble in the ashtray. I remember that from years ago in Popular Mechanics. 719-473-1240. Why do I get off on these? Chris, don't let me get on these sidebar, down these rabbit holes, will you? Oh, here's a good one to end. We haven't got much time, though, do we? Okay, I'll save this till next week. It was a question about decorative bark. Do we put plastic or fabric underneath? That is a great question. I'll start with this next week because it's something that can really affect your house structurally. So I'll put that to one side, and I'll make sure we start with that next time. Chris Moyer, thanks for helping, as you always do, expertly in the control room. We hope you have a wonderful week. God bless. We'll see you next time. Same time, same station, right here on Around the House.